Well, thank you for staying till Thursday, ladies and gentlemen. We were very interested in finding out what the genetic diversity was within snap beans for sugar concentrations, right? And we found that there was no literature available that told us whether or not there was any genetic variation among snap bean accessions for sugar. So we wanted to find out. And why were we interested in this, ladies and gentlemen? We were interested in this because we want people to consume more vegetables. And of the three reasons why people consume vegetables, in addition to texture and color, the number one reason why people are interested in consuming vegetables is because of flavor. And one of the important components of flavor, ladies and gentlemen, are sugars. And here we're talking about the reducing sugars, like, you know, and well as the non-reducing sugars. And I'm not here to try to convince you that we were trying to turn the snap bean into some sugar bomb, right, a candy bar. That's not our objective. Our objective was really twofold. We recognized that sugars do two things in plants, and they do this in snap bean pods. One is that the sugars themselves can enhance flavor because people are interested in having, you know, a sweeter produce. The other important reason is that the sugars will tend to amplify the expression of other compounds, like volatile compounds in the seeds. These are the aldehydes, right, and the ketones, right? These are the compounds that actually contribute to the flavor. One of the important ones is a thing called 1-octanthriol. The sugars don't, you know, they're not messenger RNA. They're not changing the expression. But what they're doing is they're changing how we perceive those volatile compounds. So sugars play two important roles in snap bean pods. So there is a core collection available, which has about 1,000 accessions, but we could only assay about 96 of them. And what we did was we assayed the core collection from the USDA, and we focused, we selected the lines that were edible potted beans, and we also sampled some dry bean accessions, and we evaluated them for sugars. Whenever you talk about sugars, you know, I mean, I know that all of you know this, but we have to remind ourselves, right, that the reducing sugars and the non-reducing sugars, that there's a negative correlation between those, right? So if you find a line that's high in glucose and fructose, you will find that it's going to be very low in sucrose, right? This is due to acid invertase. Sucrose is the transport sugar. It's the storage sugar. Right, whereas fructose and glucose are the sugars that are used in respiration. These are the sugars that are burned through for energy. So we have a positive correlation between glucose and fructose, and a negative correlation of those both with sucrose. Just to remind you of that fact when you look at this data. I'm going to show you this initial slide, and then I'm going to deviate a little bit. And this is an initial result. We assayed our 96 lines, and we had no idea what we were going to expect, but we found that there was fivefold differences, right, among these 96 accessions for sucrose concentration. And we highlighted, you know, some of the ones that were very low, and we highlighted some of those that were very high. Now, everyone has their faults, and I tend to be something of a statistician, right? So I focus on numbers, but my graduate student actually had photographs of these snap bean lines, and here we identified, you know, we just had photographs of the lines that were low in sucrose and the ones that were high in sucrose, and then we had photographs of those that were, you know, just the corollary to that, right? Those that were high in fructose and glucose and those that were low. And when I looked at these photographs, ladies and gentlemen, I think probably I had the same reaction that many of you do, and that is, wow, there's some interesting things here that aren't very statistical. One is that all of the lines that were very high in fructose and glucose they tended to be pretty modern snap bean cultivars, right? And the other thing is that those that tended to be high, tended to be very low in sucrose and fructose, they tended to be really big pods, and they had very big seeds. And we thought, where exactly are these sugars being stored in these fruit? And so we were a little confused by that. We said, where are the sugars in the pod? Do the sugars differ between the seeds and the actual pod tissue? That makes sense, but there was no data out there that actually supported that conclusion. And the other question we had was, how do these sugars change over time? So we thought we really can't understand the genetic diversity of sugars in snap beans until we understand a little bit more about where the sugars are and how they're changing over developmental sequences. And for those of you who are vegetable breeders, I think that you can appreciate this particular conundrum, which is, when do you sample, right? I remember I worked in cucumber breeding when I was a graduate student. I learned to hate them because they were green and the leaves were green. They were hard to harvest. Like, when would you harvest them? You know, then I went to work in dry bean genetics, and I was like, oh my God, this is so simple. You just wait till physiological maturity. You harvest all the bean seeds. You dry them down to 14% moisture, and you weigh them. Piece of cake. But vegetables, there's this huge period of immaturity. Well, if the sugars change during that that developmental immaturity, then if you sample here, you're going to have different results than if you sample here. So when do you sample? And I'm sure that every vegetable breeder out here can appreciate this this particular conundrum. So what we did was, from those 96, we chose 5. And we tried to choose 5 that represented, you know, kind of a wide range of diversity, including snap beans, wax beans, etc. I also included a dry bean, Puebla 152. And what we did was, this is dangerous. Okay. What we did was we sampled the sugars every 5 days. We tagged the flowers. After the day it opened, we sampled 5 days, 10 days, 15 days, 20 days, right, up to 30 days after development. And the other thing we did was we actually picked out the seeds from those pods, and we analyzed the sugars separately for the pods from the actual pod, we analyzed the seeds separately from the pod tissue. And this is kind of cool. Here's the first slide. First of all, this is the percent change in the seed weight over time. Clearly, all 5 of these cultivars, I mean, as they go from 0 to 30 days, they're all increasing in seed weight, so that's becoming a higher percentage of the total pod weight. What I want to point out to you is the 2 cultivars, High Style, which is a modern, you know, snap bean cultivar, contrasted to Puebla, which is a dry bean. The percentage of seed in High Style was only 27%. Is that right? Yeah, 27% of the whole pod. Whereas Puebla, the seed weight was about 40%. This is exactly what we've done over the last 50 years in snap bean breeding. We have bred the lines to have slow seed development and to have small seeds, because that's what consumers want. They don't want the seeds in the snap bean. They want the pod tissue. So this illustrates, you know, the difference between dry beans and snap beans. Here are the changes in the over the 30 days in the sugars for both the pods and the seeds. And these are averaged over all 5 cultivars and over all 5 reps over both years, right? And what we find is that the reducing sugars, like glucose and fructose, start out at about 80 to 90 milligrams per gram. And as the pod develops, those are being burned up by respiration, and they drive down to about 20 milligrams per gram at the end. Whereas sucrose here, the black line, sucrose increases from near zero to about 20 milligrams per gram. That's in the pod tissue. In the feeds, we find, interestingly, that the sucrose level, which I thought was going to be a storage sugar, I thought it would increase dramatically, averaged over all the cultivars, it tended to maintain about 60 milligrams per gram. Of course, the reducing sugars, fructose and glucose, as the seeds develop, I mean, those were burned up in respiration, and they drove from about 20 milligrams down to essentially zero. And you might say, well, nice slide, Jim, but I bet you found real big differences among those five diverse cultivars. And in fact, here are the slides of the five pretty diverse cultivars. I mean, the patterns of all five of those for the pod sugars are identical. Right, I mean, the glucose and fructose is being driven down to nearly zero, right, and sucrose is increasing to about 20 milligrams per gram. The only differences we see were in the actual seeds themselves. The reducing sugars in the seeds, as the seeds matured, they burned through, right, these reducing sugars, and they all decreased down to essentially zero. The only thing that was a little different was sucrose, which averaged over all the cultivars, remember, maintained about 60 milligrams per gram. But here it showed that sucrose was actually decreasing, except for the one on the far end, which was the dry bean cultivar, High Style, in which, and this was actually statistically significant, actually increased in sucrose content, which, you know, sucrose is a storage sugar, so that makes a certain amount of sense. Here's another kind of a fun slide. And that is that you can actually weight the sugars by how we perceive them, right? Because fructose is about 20% more detectable than the other sugars, and they can decrease dramatically over time. This is why, what does this slide tell us? This is why we like petit pois. This is why we like little snap bean pods, because they're sweeter. And it's because we perceive them as sweeter. I won't talk about that. Here's my conclusions, ladies and gentlemen. And that is that, here's my big conclusion. My big conclusion is that once you have hard data, plant physiology seems to make a lot more sense, right? I now have a greater appreciation of acid invertase than I had before. While the pods are actively developing, they are burning through fructose and glucose. As they approach maturity, respiration and growth slows in the seeds, and fructose and glucose basically drive towards zero, and they store sucrose in addition to other complex sugars. The dry bean, you know, may be a little bit of an anomaly, and that would be worth investigating. So, back to my conundrum. When do we sample? We can sample based on seed size, seed length, pod diameter, days after flowering. In fact, ladies and gentlemen, based on this data, none of those are perfect indicators. If I were writing the journal article, right, and I hope I will write the snap beans. What would I write? I'll write the snap beans were sampled at a similar developmental stage, and that will probably slip right past, you know, the editor, right? But what does? No, okay, my God, okay, you got me, right? But what the hell does sample at similar developmental stage mean? It doesn't mean much of anything, right? Because none of these criteria are going to be, the seeds develop at different rates, the pods develop at different rates. None of them are perfect. My conclusion is that the best indicator may, in fact, be pod diameter. Because, and not for a scientific reason, more for a culinary reason, and that is because our objective is to have people eat more of snap beans. They're going to be sweeter. We're going to sample at probably sieve size 4. And so that's why I think none of these are going to be perfect. The one that best fulfills our breeding objective is really to sample at sieve size 4. Thank you, James. Did I abuse my time? Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Go for it.
So how do you estimate the variability of sugar?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand that.
How do you estimate the variability?
I don't hear well. You know, my wife says it's completely...
Have you estimated the variability of the shares?
The heritability. You know, I could do that, and that's a good idea. I'll do that. Based on the genetic diversity, I'll look at the heritability. It's going to be high. Yeah, it's going to be high. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Another big question out there.
Sorry, I didn't hear.
How do you sample the beans?
How do we sample? We tagged all the flowers, and then we pulled off a sample of 5 beans at every day, and we would freeze dry them, and then this was dry weight. Yeah.
What equipment did you use? Did you use HPLC to measure sugar?
I'm sorry.
What equipment?
What did you use to measure sugars?
Oh, the HPLC. Yeah. Yeah, sure.
Okay. Well, thank you. Move on to the next.